Contrary to popular belief, most guys with man breasts cannot just bench press their way to perfect pecs. They have a medical condition called gynecomastia, and Dr. Frank Lista of the Plastic Surgery Clinic can help. A world-renowned plastic surgeon, Dr. Lista has perfected the procedure for correcting gynecomastia. Find out more at theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca. Get off the bench and into the game. Theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. You just got called up to the big league, son. Welcome to the show. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's Wednesday, the 20th of May, 2015, and this is Primetime Sports, Canada's most listened to sports talk show. I'm Bob McCown. That's Arash Madani.
And what a Wednesday, May 20th it's been so far.
That's okay. So I said repeatedly over the last few weeks, I said Ken Holland wants 5 years and $25 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a story a couple of days ago, which
Mike Babcock wants.
Oh, yeah, I said Ken Holland.
Yeah.
Because we're going to the Ken Holland press conference in a bit, yeah. By the way. What are you doing?
I'm taking the label off because it's not Primetime Sports water.
Well, why don't you have Primetime Sports water? We can get you some.
All right.
We have a closet full of it.
Okay.
Get him some water. So I says they're going to pay him $5 million a year.
Right.
He wants $5 million over 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
A year. And then there's a story comes out. He's really, no, he's not. He's looking for $3 million a year. You got six.
6 years.
No, you got 8 years.
Yeah, 8 years.
Eight years, six plus million.
Six and a quarter.
Holy cow. That's a lot. Good for him.
So the best run professional hockey franchise.
What, didn't get him? Doesn't get to keep him.
Offered him three.
There he goes with Bob Water. Right,
oh,
there.
Terrific. Offered him north of $3 million a year, reportedly.
You got a dollar? Do you think it's free?
I'll get you later.
I didn't say it was free.
But
yeah.
But the best-run professional hockey organization deemed Babcock's services were worth in and around 3 to 3.5.
Okay, I heard
and
three,
the Maple
3.
Leafs
2. Yeah.
Believe he's worth double.
Well, he's worth double if he's willing to come to Toronto.
Right. I don't know, Bob. I guess it's just money if you're MLSE.
Well,
they pay a litany of guys not to work anyway.
Yeah. Well, I'm going in for a raise tomorrow.
Sure.
I think we all should. I think it's all the money becomes,
you know, it's amazing.
Relative.
MLSE today paid more for a coach than the new Argos owners paid for a professional sports franchise.
Yeah, and part of them is the same guys.
Yeah. Two-thirds.
What'd they pay for the Argos?
I don't know. They wouldn't tell. They wouldn't say.
We know what they're worth.
Right. But how much of the debt are they incurring, if there is any debt? How much future Grey Cup revenue is involved
really
in this?
I don't really care.
Yeah, of course you don't.
The dead soldier.
Right.
You know, when people go back, now this is my position the last few years on the Argonauts. I'm tired of supporting this franchise, trying to prop them up, trying to tell people how great the product is.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I believe in it, it's time for them to do something. Time for them to show. Ken Holland is about to make some sort of an announcement. Let's join that news conference now.
You're not doing that, but what are you here to tell us today?
Well, obviously the news came out earlier today that Mike Babcock's agreed to a contract to coach the Toronto Maple Leafs. I guess, you know, first off, from my perspective, I'd like to thank Mike for 10 fabulous years. You know, hired Mike in 2005, and we made the playoffs for 10 consecutive years. I went to the Final Four three straight years in 07, 08, 09, and won a cup in 08. And at the same time, you know, the last few years, I thought I did a fabulous job in putting some younger players in our organization onto our team and developing them into players that we think are going to help us going forward. So, you know, I've got mixed emotions today. Mike and I were in Prague together for five, you know, from I got there last Sunday, he got there Tuesday, and then we flew home on Sunday, spent 8 hours sitting beside each other in the plane. And then, you know, I talked to, he was at my office yesterday for about an hour, and then he came over to my house this morning at 8 o'clock in the morning, texted me, and we spent some time this morning. So I've got mixed emotions because he's one of the greatest coaches in the league, if not the greatest coach. But at the same time, you know, as we went through the process, I think Mike understood that when you'd coached in the same city for 10 years, you know, my offers last June were a four-year term. Again, in January, was a four-year term. We went to, when we started the process, he wanted to kind of go out and talk to teams that had interest. And then as we sat yesterday morning, I said, Mike, the best I can do is 5 years. When you've coached, when you've been in the same city as long as I have and as long as Mike has, you don't get much longer term than 4 and 5 years. So I think that certainly part of the decision-making process probably for Mike was the amount of term that he could get in Toronto versus what we were prepared to give.
Do you feel like you were left at the altar?
I don't. You know, I think that, you know, I certainly knew when we, you know, I'm going to go back 2 weeks ago. Mike and I drove to Grand Rapids and spent time together, and he said, Ken, I'd like an opportunity to explore the market. And I said, give me a few days. I talked to our owners, talked to Jimmy Devolano, talked to a couple other people, and eventually decided to grant him permission. Certainly when you got a guy like Mike Babcock who's accomplished what he's accomplished and one of the faces probably of our hockey club, I certainly knew that it was going to be something that was watched very, very closely. I wanted Mike back if Mike at the end of the day wanted to be here. If he felt at the end of the process this was the best fit for him. I also would say to you, I know that I think it was a difficult decision for him. I think he's got roots here. He's been here for 10 years. His family has roots. You get close to the players. We spent 5 days with watching the World Championships and watching Dylan Larkin, and you know, he's more of the future, and that's sort of the direction that we're going. So I know it was a difficult decision, but at the end of the day, he made a decision that he felt was best for him. Now, I've got some decisions to make, and our goal is to beat Mike.
Ken,
is
Jeff Blashill your new next head coach?
Can you speak a little closer to the mic?
Sure, okay, sorry, yeah. What I'm going to do, I talked to Blash today. I told Blash that I'm waiting to see their playoff schedule because they're going into the third round. Tonight's game 7, Oak City versus Utica, and then once I know the schedule, I'm going to go down and spend some time a day with them. So he's certainly a leading candidate. I haven't made a final decision. I need to spend some time with him before I know anything. So I hopefully next week I get over to talk to spend some time with Blash.
Is Dan Bylsma on the mix?
He's certainly a name. I haven't really had a chance to put some names together, but I've got my list is going to be short. It's going to be two or three names. But that's certainly a good name.
When did you know that you were out of the running for Mike?
Pardon me?
When did you know that you were out of the running?
At 11:15 today.
So you had negotiated all the way up to 11:15?
I don't know if talked. You know, negotiation to me means you stand there and you keep exchanging numbers back and forth. And I think that certainly exchanging, you know, numbers they're always a part of the decision that any of us make in sports. But it was also, you know, there was a lot of other things. So, you know, again, when he came, he texted me this morning at 8 o'clock and came to my house. We spent about a half an hour together, 40 minutes, before I headed down to the office. You know, we had one more good talk, and I told him I had a couple of players that I had to interview, and I was going to call him when that was done. And I called him at 11:15, and he told me, he said, Ken, I've made a decision. And I'm going to Toronto.
Kenny, how surprised are you with the numbers?
Pardon me?
How surprised are you with the numbers?
I've been in this sport a long time. And, you know, one of the things that I said to Mike, I think I've said it to all you, anytime you're an unrestricted free agent in the prime of your career, there's going to be opportunities that probably will stagger you. And, you know, given, and I use the word stagger because certainly when you look at the sort of, I'm aware of what the industry pays. But in order sometimes to get people, you've got to go, you know, above and beyond the industry standards in order to try to get somebody to come to you. So I'm happy for Mike. You know, again, Mike gave Red Wing fans and our organization 10 fabulous years. I love working with Mike, you know, so I'm happy for him.
He said from the get-go that it was about winning and it was about family. And you look at Toronto, and I don't know if they're going to win anytime soon. Are you a little shocked? And were you guys ever, do you think you guys were ever the front runner?
I mean, you have to ask Mike that. I would say to you that it was. I just know it was a difficult decision because I was sort of, you know, I was involved at the front end, and then we went to Prague, and then we were both in Prague. He met with some people there. Brendan Shanahan came over there on Friday or something. I know he spent some time with Shanny over in Prague. You know, who was the front runner? How do you handicap the race? That's one for Mike. I just think that, again, that he'd been here for 10 years. He had, you know, when you've been somewhere for a long time, you got roots. We've worked hard to try to build a program, and we actually talked about that the last couple of days. You know, a program of player development, drafting, and they come up here, and Mike makes them accountable, and there's some young players. We're trying to transition here to some younger people. We're trying to stay competitive. We're trying to compete to make the playoffs. We're trying to compete to go on a playoff run. And I think when you put your heart and soul, we've worked together hand in hand, that these aren't easy decisions. If they were easy decisions, you probably had the wrong people in the first place. So, you know, when I hired Mike Babcock, he had passion. He had a work ethic. He became a Red Wing. Ultimately, I think that you know, he went into this process and he made the decision that he made today. I believe it was a difficult decision for him, not only to choose to go to Toronto, but also to choose to leave Detroit. But I know that he had some, you know, a couple other teams that he talked to that were impressive as well. So I don't know how to handicap it, but I do know that it was a difficult decision.
You talked about familiarity. How does that familiarity help Blashill?
Well, I got to meet with Blash. I know you guys would like me to announce that he's the next coach, but I, you know, I think there's a process we got to go. I got to meet with Blash, you know, and up until 11:15 today, when I got the call from Mike, I haven't really reached out to anybody. There was a chance that Mike could come back. I mean, we talked yesterday. Even at 8 o'clock this morning, I know that he was down to the short strokes of making a decision, but he hadn't quite make it. And again, between 8 o'clock, 8:15, and 11:15 today, he said, "I kind of made my decision." So, you know, I got to go spend some time with Blash now. Again, I want the focus of Jeff Blashill and the Grand Rapids Griffins to be on, you know, winning the next series and having those young players in our system continue to experience playoff hockey. So I don't want, you know, at some point in time I'll get into Grand Rapids on an off day, spend some time with Blash, and then from there, you know, is there another name or two? Let me see how the first meeting goes with Jeff Blash. Certainly with Blash, you know, we've worked together, so it's been, you know, he was here for a year as an assistant coach. He worked more for Mike. I go in the room. I talk to the head coach every day. Ryan Martin's the general manager. He talks to Blash. So I want to spend some time with Blash, and then I'll decide what's the next step after I've met with Jeff Blashill.
Have you spoken to any of the players since?
Pardon me?
Have you spoken to any of the players since you heard from Mike?
Actually, I was talking. I had my meeting today with Henrik Zetterberg. So I told when I would Z came in at 10:30, and I told him I needed to talk to Babs at 11:15. So Henrik was one of the first people to find out that of Mike's decision. I did call Pavel Datsyuk. Kroner's in the air, flying from. He was on a vacation, so. I've had Chris Draper text him so that when he lands, he knows, I'm sure, in the world that he lives in a little different world than I am. I'm 60-ish, he's 30-ish, so I'm sure he's been a little more up in tune. But certainly I wanted the leadership, the captains and assistant captains, to hear from me of what my decision is.
What did Hank say?
Not much. He just said he's been watching it from afar. And, I think that, I'd like to think that the Detroit, we're trying to build something. Hank's the captain. Mike's made a decision. We now got to go to work, and Mike's in our division. You know, he's 4 hours down the road, and we're going to play him four times, and they're trying to make the playoffs, and we're trying to make the playoffs. So I'm sure Hank is like I am. He's thankful for 10 fabulous years, but... he's now somebody that we got to try to be. He didn't say. I have so many people, so much going on there. I quickly called Hank. I said, I want you to hear it from me, because he had left the rink and he was gone somewhere. And Draper came in and things were going, and my phone was texting and things were going on. So I just wanted to reach out to Hank as he was driving, just to say, Hank, just you hear it from me first. So we didn't get into much of a very long conversation.
Ken, that 8 a.m. meeting, a lot of fans would say they wish they could be a fly on the wall for that. I know you said you don't want to push a guy to be here if he doesn't want to be here, but was it one final sales pitch? What was that hour like?
He'd gone through his process. I think he was close to making a decision. We had one last conversation. That's about it. I mean, at the end of the day, he needed one last conversation, and I talked about today that I felt that, from a term standpoint, we sort of were at our limit in term. And beyond, if we weren't prepared to go any more term, then it was harder to go. And it doesn't even mean that if we went more term that he was going to be back. You know, he spent a lot of time here over the last, however long it was, 2 weeks, kind of getting himself to that point in time. And I think that... I also think that as he's going through the process, that there's emotions involved, because you've worked together for so long. So I think that you've also got to go through that process of, one meeting leads to another meeting, to understanding that emotion is going to, you're slowly making a decision to head in another direction. So, I think today when I met him at 8 o'clock, I think he was well on his way to making a decision, but he wasn't 100% there. And between our meeting there and 11:15, he made a decision that he did.
Ken, the way this played out in public, there were times that it was almost like a circus-type atmosphere, the way he played it out in public. Were you comfortable the entire time the way he played this out? Looking back about the interview on Friday, it looked like at times you may have been a little uncomfortable.
Is that the Drager interview?
Yeah.
Somebody told me I looked uncomfortable. I kind of had my hands stuck there, and I wasn't sure if I should move my hands or not move my hands, because I kind of got started there. So if I looked uncomfortable, I wasn't uncomfortable. I guess my comfort level has been that we got 10 great years. It's a decade. That's a long time in pro sports. I've built up a friendship with a man that we talked about today that we want to go on for the rest of our lives. My daughter's getting married in July, he's coming. Him and Maureen are coming to the wedding. So it's been 10 fabulous years. Wished we'd have won a couple more series. We feel disappointed we weren't able to finish off the Tampa Bay series when you're up 3-2. And we talked about the Chicago series 2 years ago. But lots has gone on that you're there every day. We're trying to develop some young people. So. It's emotional. It's 10 years. It's been 10. From our perspective, again, we wish we'd have won more playoff series. We certainly in the Boston series, I think a year ago, we weren't ready to go anywhere in that Boston series, given the injuries and given the team that we played. But we wish we'd have, we had a few game sevens. You know, you think about game seven against Pittsburgh, and you think game seven in San Jose when we were down 3-0, and you think being up 3-1 against Chicago, we couldn't win the series. We talked about Tampa being up 3-2, and we couldn't win the series. But and that's you know, you win some of those series, and all of a sudden the record looks better. But we're the only team to make the playoffs 10 straight years in a row. We've worked hand in hand. I think I'd like to. He said to me, you know, today I've challenged him to make him better, and vice versa. And but at the end of the day, all good things come to an end, and he's on to a new chapter of his life, his professional career. And now, same thing. I've got to make some decisions here about who the next coach of the Detroit Red Wings is. And our goal is to try to make the playoffs, and our goal is to try to win some playoff series. But with regards to Mike, it's been 10 fabulous years professionally and personally. And he made the decision based upon all the information, the process he went. And from a circus standpoint, I'm fortunate I'm not on Twitter. I don't tweet. I don't Twitter. I do that for a reason. You know, I don't read newspapers. Certainly when we're sitting there at breakfast on Thursday morning in Prague and Mike says to me, you know, Darren Dreger would like to fly over and interview something, and you're flying over from Toronto. We're in Prague. Boy, they're going to fly over from Toronto to sit with us. And we sat in, and we did for a 7 or 8 minute interview. You certainly understand the scope of how big it is, but I don't go on all those social medias for a reason. You know, it's just so that I want to stay focused on what I got to do. I got Chris Draper that is on social media. I've got Ryan Martin that's on social media. I've got people in my organization that keep me posted as I need to know what's going on out there. So from a circus standpoint, certainly the last 2 days, you know, when Mike said on that interview that Denny Darren Dreger asked him if he'd be ready to make his decision on May the 25th, and he said, I'll be ready to make it on May 20th. Certainly when we landed back here on Monday afternoon and I got in the office on Tuesday morning, and I'm losing the thing, it's today, I mean, the days have gone fast, mm-hmm. yesterday, and all of a sudden my phone's going crazy and there's media and people are sensing a decision, I started to, you know, grasp that circus atmosphere that you were talking about. But up until, you know, the last 3-4 days, my attitude was we had an employee, a friend, a coach that had helped give us 10 great years. He wanted an opportunity to explore the market before he made a decision, and there was a number of different ways that I thought that I could possibly handle the situation with Mike being an unrestricted free agent. I thought that was ultimately the best way to be fair to Mike. And at the same time, if Mike was back, knowing that Mike had gone through a process and he was back here because we were the best fit for him. And if we weren't the best fit for him, I got to find a new coach, and we got to continue doing what Mike and I were doing up until 3-4 days ago.
The general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, Ken Holland, you've been listening to his news conference live from Detroit. As the news came down today that his former coach, Mike Babcock, has a new deal. And surprise, it is with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Babcock signs what is reported to be an eight-year, $50 million contract, which amortized would mean it's worth $6.25 million on average per season.
Which would make him the 45th highest-paid NHL player.
If he was a player.
If he was a player.
Well, of greater interest, he is clearly the highest paid coach in the National Hockey League. I think Joel Quenneville is next at $2.75 million, so it's not really close. That's not all that unusual, but let's put it in context. So Babcock gets $6.25 million. Highest paid coach in the NBA, Greg Popovich, $11 million a year. In the NFL, Sean Payton and Pete Carroll each make $8 million a year. Highest paid NCAA football coach, Nick Saban at Alabama, $7.1 million. Highest paid NCAA basketball coach, Coach K at Duke, $9.7 million.
And I think that $9.7 million includes endorsements, though. That's not from the university, but anyway.
Mike Socia, Joe Maddon each make $5 million a year to manage in Major League Baseball. So he's ahead of them. But he is more than double the next highest paid coach right now in the National Hockey League. There is absolutely no question in my mind that this will change things. It will raise the bar for all NHL coaches over time. There will be those who will be able to argue, and successfully, that they are worth at least some percentage of what Babcock is now worth. That's how sports has always worked. Everything is based on comparables. And while Mike Babcock may, in some people's eyes, be judged or adjudged to be the best coach in hockey, there are others who would say he is only one of the best coaches in hockey.
He's won one cup.
You know, it depends on how you want to look at it. I mean, if you want to look at recent history, successes of other coaches, records of other coaches during regular season or postseason, he wouldn't be in the top three or four. That's not exactly how I think you should look at it, but nonetheless, again, somebody wanted to pay him $6.25 million.
Yeah.
That it happened to be the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe is interesting or curious or self-explanatory. We'll talk to John Shannon about this announcement. No, don't forget, Toronto had been essentially discounted by virtually everybody in the media. The thought process was it was either going to be Buffalo or Detroit the last few days. I believed he wasn't going back to Detroit. It sounds like
do you think
Ken Holland still thought there was some chance.
Do you think it was an 11th hour call with the treasure chest?
I don't want to guess. I'm happy to wait till tomorrow, and
sure,
hopefully Babcock will be on and Shanahan will be on, and we'll have a chance to talk to them about the process and did it come down to Toronto versus Buffalo? Was Detroit always in the mix?
Mm-hmm.
Did Babcock go to Holland's house at 8 o'clock this morning, hoping that Holland would throw something else on the table that would allow him to stay? Clearly, there was significant difference between what Detroit was offering and what Toronto was offering. I'm not sure that when all is said and done, based on what Holland said, that Babcock wasn't looking for that, wasn't looking to stay in Detroit if he could justify it, mm-hmm. was willing to take maybe a few less years and a few fewer million in order to stay. I understand that. I've done the exact same thing in the past. So, and I don't know whether he'll acknowledge that, but hopefully we'll get to all that tomorrow. And Ken Holland may join us a little bit later on in the program. Also, Bob Nicholson will be with us, the CEO of the Oilers Entertainment Group, Shai Davidi, Nick Kyprios. But John Shannon will be with us next. We'll get his take on the Babcock decision and where to now for Detroit and Buffalo. Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand, absolutely free. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment fashion, they pick themselves off the front page of the newspaper tomorrow morning. Either that or they get pages one and two in a deal of negligible significance. Bell and Tannenbaum buy the Toronto Argonauts and pledge to move them to BMO Field.
Beginning in 2016.
Whenever.
You'll be there, Bob, season ticket holder.
Carry on as you were. But the Toronto Maple Leafs then turn around and hire Mike Babcock as their new head coach, an eight-year, $50 million contract, we expect.
And the news broke, Bob, during the Argo press conference.
Perfect.
Larry Tannenbaum was asked about the Babcock move during the presser.
Well, that's the way it goes at MLSE. John Shannon joins us now from the NHL on Sportsnet. All hands on deck down there at the CBC building?
I don't know. I'm not at the CBC building, Robert.
Oh, all hands except you.
Yeah, I suppose so. Getting ready to go to the MasterCard Memorial Cup tomorrow.
Oh, correct. So he gets an 8-year deal, this Babcock fellow.
Yeah.
Last coach to coach 8 years for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
You know what? I was wondering the very same thing. And I don't think Pat coached for 8 consecutive years.
7.
I was going to say it was George.
George Punch Imlach.
Yeah.
1958 exactly. to 1969, coached 750 games.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and you know, it's fascinating to talk about coaches' shelves life. Now Babcock, let's face it, Babcock defied all odds in Detroit himself with all that, with all the time he spent with the Red Wings. So this is an 8-year contract that gets him to the age of 60, Bob. And you know all about getting to the age of 60. So.
I have fond recollections of those those years now long in my rearview mirror, yes.
Indeed.
Well, you have to be at least a bit surprised by this. I found out about it as I got into my car to drive to work. I thought the Toronto Maple Leafs were out of the picture simply because nobody was talking about them anymore. Clearly, they were never out of the picture.
No, and the one thing I will give Damien credit for is on Hockey Night in Canada on, not the last Saturday, but the Saturday before, saying that Brendan Shanahan was at the World Championships in Prague and was hoping to have one last meeting with Mike Babcock. And whether that meeting was to say, hey, listen, you know, whatever offer you get from somewhere else, we're interested and we want an opportunity to talk to you one more time. And that's something of that ilk occurred. And the other thing is I would suggest that with what's going on in Buffalo, what is happening in Detroit, and how Brendan is managing the Maple Leafs, this is much closer to a blank canvas here than it is anywhere else. You know, Mike Babcock is now in a position to be able to hopefully have negotiated a situation that says, you know what, I want every coach in the company to report to me with a style, and I want to be able to make sure that this happens, whether it's at the ECHL level, whether it's at the American League level, because there's no coach for the Marlies right now. And so every coach will coach the Babcock way and have much more influence. And in fact, maybe Mike Babcock has the opportunity to hire these coaches now. I mean, that's, and with the you know, the security they've given Mike, this is one of those situations that now that there's one way to do things with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it's not the player's way. It will be Mike Babcock's way.
John, how much of a say do you think he'd want on personnel, if at all?
Oh, I think he'll want some. And let's face it, this is still a team without a general manager. Now,
well, that's
I don't think,
yeah.
But I don't think, Arash, that we're talking about a conventional general manager anyway.
Yeah.
Well, this is... Brendan Shanahan is the head of hockey operations. Mark Hunter is the scout. Kyle Dubas is in the picture. Brendan Pridham's their capologist. Mike Babcock, he's part of now, for want of another way to put it, he's part of Brendan Shanahan's player personnel kitchen cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
He will have some say, you hope, long-term, short-term. I was actually thinking perhaps Babcock, as a head coach, every head coach goes to the draft and has very, very little to do other than walk around, drink coffee, shake hands, and befriend everybody at the media fence. Perhaps Babcock will be more involved with the Leafs situation with Mark Hunter on how to draft and who to draft, and does this change who the Leafs are interested in with their pick in the first round?
It wouldn't surprise me if he's named vice president of hockey operations or some obtuse title like that. Would it surprise you?
Well, then they're going to have to do another press release because right now, the press release says head coach. This is something that our pal McLean and I have talked about. Just because every other hockey organization has a president, a general manager, and blah, 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 Brendan Shanahan is creating a new organizational style, a new organizational chart. And so I don't think that there are any rules in place that suggest that what is the convention around the National Hockey League will be the convention with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
The days of a coach and general manager being one and the same, and we have referred to the late Punch Imlach, who had that title with the Toronto Maple Leafs, it is virtually impossible to have that title with the sophistication that exists today, isn't it? You just don't get a chance to see any of your minor league players. You don't have time to watch a lot of other games, the things that the general managers should be doing.
Daryl Sutter admittedly didn't like it.
Yeah, well, Pat did have that same portfolio at one point with the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, he did.
Around the turn of the century. But you have to have so much faith in the people around you to do that. You have to have the ability to, you know, to designate the head of scouting and then trust what the head of scouting does. You know, I mean, the football blueprint that, say, Bill Belichick has created, that Bill Parcells used to have, doesn't work in hockey because you play too many games.
Yeah.
But from a hockey perspective, I think it's very difficult to have one person do the two jobs, particularly if you don't have, you know, a band of merry men of five or six guys you absolutely trust implicitly.
So, John, what do you think changed here over the last few days, or did it at all? Were there some smokescreen sent that Mike Babcock was not interested in the Maple Leafs and that there were other teams involved? Or did it get to the point where he was negotiating with the Sabres and then perhaps Brendan Shanahan said, we can exceed everything the Pagulas have to offer?
I think there's a bit of that. The one thing I would, and I do not know this, but I do know the people involved. One guy you mentioned already in Larry Tannenbaum, mm-hmm. I think at a certain point you'd have to wonder if the board didn't get involved and say, hey, to Brendan, how are we going to lose the best coach in the hockey world in the center of the hockey universe to the Buffalo Sabres?
Yeah.
How does that happen? They don't have, I mean, Terry Pegula, yes. Is he rich? Absolutely. Does he have more money than God? Probably.
And he's willing to pay. He's willing to spend it.
He's willing to pay.
Yeah.
He's willing to pay. And if he goes into debt, he'll just drill another well, right?
Right.
MLSE is not much different.
Yeah.
And MLSE, over the last 4 or 5 years, when you consider the amount of money they've spent on infrastructure, the amount of money they spent on their CEO for the next, 40 days, this should not be considered extraordinary, but it does show you that this company, MLSE, does have a commitment to try to turn this ship around. And you know, you have to give the board some credit, and you have to give Brendan some credit, and the people around Brendan to finally say, hey, listen, we need to be able to create a level of credibility, because I think, Bob, you'd probably agree to this more than anybody. What was lacking for the longest period of time was pure and simple credibility in the marketplace, and they may have solved that today.
That's an interesting question.
Well, tell me about how much hope you had with this roster.
Oh, none. I like Mike Babcock, and I respect Mike Babcock's skill set. But fundamentally, I don't think you can make chicken soup without a chicken.
No, but I think
Mike Babcock is being given a soup recipe with no chicken.
No,
for now.
I tell you what, I might even take it a step further to use your analogy. I think Mike Babcock is the chef that's going to design the soup and create that recipe somehow, some way.
Well, he better start with a chicken because he has, you know, I don't think he's got one.
Well, let's just get out of the kitchen here for a second. John, the question I have, is this a game changer for coaches' compensation now? Has Mike Babcock now, when Joel Quenneville's name comes up down the road and Alain Vigneault's name comes up and Daryl Sutter's name comes up, and insert name here of Stanley Cup champion coaches, and in some of those cases, multiple Stanley Cup champion coaches, is the compensation scale now totally different than it's ever been before? Has Mike Babcock changed that? You know these governors. You know these GMs.
Yeah.
What does this mean now, the trickle effect for down the road?
I don't know where Ash had to go, and I talked to a couple of guys that have told me it won't change a thing.
They're wishful thinking, John, because this changes everything. Invariably and inevitably, and we can point historically to every one of the benchmarks that's ever been established in sport. Whether it's A-Rod getting $25 million a year, and everybody said, that's absurd. Hicks has lost his mind. He way overpaid. All of that stuff. And today, I know it takes time.
No.
We got all kinds of players making $30 million a year.
Now, dare I remind you, it's you, Bob McCown, saying that when you consider that you sometimes believe that coaches don't make as much difference as people think.
Yeah, but I'm not suggesting it's valid paying him $6.25 million. I'm saying the question that was asked was, does it impact on the future? And the answer is 100% it does.
I don't disagree with that. But what's going to happen is the cycles of coaches, we went through a cycle where every team was getting a new coach and had to come out of the American League. Mm-hmm. Then we went through a cycle of coaches that had to be a former player. I mean, we've seen cycles go and come, and whether the cycle is, remember, there's no cap or no floor on what you pay your coach there yet. Yet. And I wonder if there isn't a discussion in New York to have that situation. You're allowed to pay $10 million for your coaching staff or whatever. You wonder if teams are going to say, hey, by the way, what difference will a coach make? Will it make a $3 million difference? Will it make it a $4 million difference? I think it'll end up being totally, totally subjective with the organization involved. It won't be a broad stroke to say every coach is going to get a big raise.
Look, it is one of the ways the rich can separate themselves from the poor.
Yep.
And heretofore have not had to do that. And the Toronto Maple Leafs have taken the first step in that direction. So any franchise, Detroit, Boston, the Rangers, maybe the Montreal Canadiens, Philadelphia Flyers, who probably went on the cheap by hiring a college coach. I don't know what he's making, but I'm guessing it's pretty low. But those franchises now can open their eyeballs and say, you know, for a little bit of money that doesn't go against the cap, we can go and hire whoever we want to coach. Now, you may not think the coaches are valuable, but I'm going to guess that when push comes to shove, a lot of general managers and a lot of owners will say, well, I'd rather spend a lot and get the best guy. It's only money. It doesn't mean anything else to the system except that cash. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen.
It's an interesting discussion point. And you're right. It's not going to happen overnight, and it's going to take time. And you wonder with a guy like Quenneville, Vigneault, even Boudreau, when you consider the guys in the conference final, what their next pay demands will be.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it'll be a lot higher than it would have been before today.
Yeah, but there's no guarantee they're going to get it.
There may not be, but you know what? Then they do what Babcock did. I mean, clearly there were at least a couple and maybe as many as four or five teams that were willing to pay Mike Babcock more than $3.5 million.
John, did you get any indication?
I don't agree, Bob. I think there were two. There weren't four or five. There were two.
Do you think that...
No, Detroit clearly was in that group. Detroit was willing to pay him close to $3.5 million. I'm told it was 3.2. It might have been 3.4.
But they were in that group. But that's not out of the realm. I mean, what was out of the realm was the amount of money being thrown around with salary and bonuses in Buffalo, and obviously the money thrown around here.
Did you get any idea what the Buffalo offer was, John?
No, just the speculation. Nobody would confirm numbers, but just the, you know, 6 or 7 years and with bonuses close to a similar amount that the Maple Leafs offered. I mean, in the end, honestly, do you think Mike Babcock will last 8 years as a coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, history suggests no.
Right. That's right.
I don't know the answer to that question. I don't wish that it's less than 8 years. I hope he's successful and is here for as long as he wants to be here. But historically, the odds are drastically against him.
And you have to give Brendan Shanahan credit. He has changed the complexion of the Maple Leaf front office in the short period of time he has been in charge.
Well,
no doubt about it. And
perhaps
right
true, but
own, but you have to give him credit for trying and making changes.
Yeah, you may. The only thing he's proven to me so far is that he, like many others who've gone before him, have the extraordinary ability to spend other people's money. I'm married to a woman who has a similar skill set. Arash, lovely to see you. See you again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
More to come. Nick Kyprios will join us. Shai Davidi, Bob Nicholson. More on the Babcock signing. This is Primetime.